Neda nambari pada tar mudoga.
Tene sa mudo.
Te tren tar ko mudo.
Na.
Tren tar chaba zo tene sa mudo pa te ki gre. Kaba.
Oh, sopa ni yore. Buke sopa. Si che di sa ma so.
Ninji ke ta de te ninji ke de.
Ninji ke de. Ate yong sa ma so.
Tene tena yang de. Pe, Yuma Manam Sobai, Neon Jopa, Pace, and Nanga said, and Chosoi.
Maybe Namame, Yuma Manam Sobai, Neon Jopa, Pace, and Nanga said, and Chosoi. Maybe Namame.
But I mean, everyone who's in the Tibetan class is here, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's start by looking at this in Tibetan. We're going to do two classes in one here.
We start with that.
Yeah, we start with the Tibetan, yes. It's a new verse. It's the verse on page 5 at the top. Five means in the root. Is there some people that belong to the Tibetan class that are not here now? Oh. All right, then we can't do that. So, we'll do the other thing. It's the same. The verse says, Ne dang nampar rikpa dang. De duk le dang chingpo dang. Chewa dang chingpa dang. Drua tumung mai. That's what's meant by ground here. So the for each particular being, the all-based consciousness is not experienced in common. So if you look at another being, you don't see their all-based consciousness. Also, Nampar Rigpa, awareness. You don't see their awareness, and here awareness means the what's called the sevenfold collection of awareness. So it's a handy phrase that's used in the Tibetan, and you can put different numbers on it. You can say the sixfold collection, the sevenfold collection, the eightfold collection. So we'll start with the Eightfold because it has all the other ones in it. The Eightfold Collection of Consciousness means the all-inclusive base consciousness, the afflicted mentality, nyuni, and then the rational consciousness, yiji nambra shepa, and then each of the five sensory consciousnesses.
Do you like to write? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can do it in Tibetan. Pardon?
Mentioned in the back of the book, one by one.
Yes, they're mentioned in a footnote in the back of the book. So, this English class is now a Tibetan class.
Hat jemand noch ein Fleisch?
Wollen wir jetzt noch eine Pinsel?
Sometimes I use it.
You will use it on the same occasion. Doesn't matter. Thank you.
Nyamshi Namshi is the Tibetan for Alaya Vijnana. So the Alaya is the Kun Shi and Vijnana Namshi, where Kun means all and Shi base or basis. So it's all base in the sense of that consciousness, that Namshi consciousness, which is the base for Kun, everything. So everything experienced in samsara or nirvana has its she, its base, in this all-base consciousness. It can be mentioned, or should be mentioned, that not all of the schools posit in all-base consciousness. For example, some of the Rangtong schools don't claim an all-based consciousness. They say you can explain the process of consciousness without the all-base, so they don't use it as part of the explanation. But in the Chittamatran and in the Shentong Madhyamaka, the all-based consciousness is used, and it's very handy for explaining things. Especially for explaining how the mind gets disturbed, how it gets confused in samsara. Because it's in the all-base consciousness that the seeds of the bhakchak, right, the habitual patterns, are stored. Then, nyumong pe yi. Nyumong pa is this word afflicted we've had before. And yi is one of the words for mind. So you could say the afflicted mind, the afflicted mentality. You could use mentality just to get another word for mind, since we use that word so much already. Some people translate this klesha mind, because nyumonpo means klesha in Sanskrit, right? So however you want to translate it, it refers to that aspect of consciousness that looks towards the all base and conceives of the idea I, me, mine. That's afflicted mentality. It's that particular function of consciousness. Right?
Can you give another word for
afflicted? You have trouble understanding the English, you mean. Mm-hmm. Afflicted means disturbed, or, yeah. It's the same word as translated disturbing emotions. Right? Mm-hmm. So you could say the disturbed mentality. So this particular, this seventh consciousness, as it's also called, is defined as that aspect of consciousness that looks towards the all base and thinks I. So that's all it does, but because of that, then you get it's compared to the wind, you know, and the Kunshi Namshe is compared to the ocean. So when you get this idea of I, it stirs the whole ocean of the all-base, all of the impressions stored in the all-base consciousness come into motion. And because of that activity of the wind of the idea of I, then all of the rest of them manifest as the waves of the ocean. And all of the rest of them are then yiji navrashepa. So we have the same word yi as we have here, right? So the same kind of mind, it's conceptual mind. thinking mind or rational mind, however you want to translate it. For years, people were translating this as the mental consciousness, Yiji Nambara Shepa. I think that's a little bit vague, say mental consciousness, because all the consciousnesses are mental. So these days I'm translating it as rational consciousness. And the rational consciousness is that aspect of consciousness that puts on the names onto the impression coming in through your senses. So your Miki Nambara Shepa, Mik is I, right? Miki Nam Shep, I consciousness. So your I consciousness perceives a form, and that is then fed in as a data, right? Piece of information. And at that point it's non-conceptual. It's just the impression of that particular form. Then the rational mind gets a hold of that picture and says, oh yes, that's a door. I know what that is. That's a door, says the Yiji Nambara Shepa. So that's that aspect of consciousness that puts the names onto things. The thinking mind. So then we just have the rest of them are the other sensory consciousnesses, right? Na Yi Nam She, the consciousness of the ear. And na we nam she, the consciousness of the nose. Che nam she, the tongue consciousness. And luji nam she, literally is the body consciousness. Consciousness associated with the body. So the function of yiji nam she is the same with respect to all of the sensory consciousness. It takes the data coming in and puts on a name. So, for example, some smell comes in and the Yiji Namche thinks about it and says, ah, incense. Or maybe says something else, right? Depends on what the smell is. And it's the same with all of them. Sensory consciousness itself is non-conceptual. That's an important point.
Including the mental?
No, the mental consciousness is the conceptual one. Right? That's the one that has the ideas.
Oh, but the other five are not conceptual.
The five sensory consciousnesses are non-conceptual. They just feed in data into the computer. Right? So, yeah, then to connect it up with the text, yes?
And if one, for example, thinks about the feeling.
That would also be Yiji Nambara Shepa. All types of thinking activity is done by that.
Also memory.
Well, memory, there's a big debate on where that function is between the schools. They have a debate. In the Chitta Matram, memory is explained as based on Rangrik, self-awareness. We don't have Rangrik as one of the eight consciousnesses. It's more, it's part of the process of consciousness. But there are also schools that don't even posit a Rangrik. The wrong tone pass. Right? Say there's no such thing as self-awareness. This is a bunch of nonsense. You don't need to talk about self-awareness to explain memory and everything else, right? So they explain the whole thing in a different way. But they have a hard time explaining memory without self-awareness, because if there's not this quality of the mind being aware of what that it is experiencing something, then how is it going to remember it afterwards? They have a very funny kind of explanation of that, which I don't accept. I don't think they explained it in a way that explains anything. In other words, I think you need self-awareness as the expression of memory.
It's even a nicer idea, no?
Pardon?
It's a nicer idea, I think.
Yes, another idea they
have. A nicer idea.
A nicer idea. It's logically, it gives a nicer picture.
And you have something.
Yeah. Yeah, you have something there that explains it, right? But the text here says just awareness, right? The term used in the Tibetan here is Nampar Rigpa. Right? And all the way through here we've used Nampar Shepa. Mm-hmm. Nam She is just an abbreviation of Nampar Shepa. You can do that in Tibetan, right? So Nampar Shepa is exactly a synonym for Nampar Rigpa in the Chitta Mountain School. So whether you call it consciousness, Nampar Shepa, or you call it awareness, Nampar Rigpa, they're exactly synonymous in the Chitta Mountain. So the text calls the first one, the Kunshi Namshe, the ground. And the rest of them it calls calls awareness. And I translated it principles of awareness, I think. Yeah. No, just awareness. So there are some places where I translate Nampar Rigpa as principles of awareness. Yeah. And in that case, it's the Nampar that's coming out as principles. When I translated principles of awareness, what the Nampar refers to is all the different forms of awareness.
Kunshi Namshe was the ground, and the rest were what? Did you say the rest were?
The text calls them just awareness. Okay. So, this is the all based consciousness and awareness.
What is the sevenfold collection?
Well, here we have the Eightfold, right?
Yeah.
But the Kunshi Namche is already mentioned there, under Ne, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So then awareness just covers all the other seven. So in the text, when you see the term Jesok means the Eightfold collection. Sok is like collection. And J is eight. So that means all eight of them. If you see Dun Sok, it's the sevenfold collection. It's these seven, you know, without the Kunshi and the other seven on the list. Sometimes it says Sok Druk, the sixfold collection. Then it's starting from here and going down, the rational mind and the five sensory. So it refers to them with all three of those names, right? Depending on how many of them is included in what's being said. And I use that term in the book, the sixfold collection and the sevenfold collection. So now I know what it means. So the text is saying all eight of these are not experienced in common. And that's really actually a very staggering statement. Because it both means that you can never see another person's consciousness. It's never perceived directly. And also, what you perceive is never going to be the same as what another person perceives. Because your consciousness is different. So we don't live in the same world, as far as consciousness is concerned. We have different consciousness of things, depending on karmic background and training of the mind and so on. So the next thing not experienced in common is happiness and suffering. So the actual experience of being happy or of being unhappy is always completely private. It's never shared by two people. As we were talking about yesterday, you can conclude that another person is happy from the expression on the face and other signs. But it's an inferential cognition, right? It's a deductive deductive reasoning, which means that there's your own concept involved. So it's your idea of what the other person is experiencing. And, through knowing a person for a long time or through knowing the kind of situation that is being experienced, and in other ways, you can have some sort of a similar experience as another person because you're used, especially people who have been together for a long time, they're used to experiencing things in a similar way. So the experience can be very, very similar. But still, the actual experience itself is different for each person. And that's whether it's positive or negative. Then the next thing, next word in the Tibetan is lay, meaning karma, translated here as action. So I translated it literally as action, which is what the word, Tibetan word means. And this has to be qualified. It's not all forms of karmic action that are uncommon or not experienced in common. It's the karma collected mentally. So as you know from studying other texts, there are four types of karma created through speech, three types through body, and three types through mind. And karma created or accumulated with the body and with the speech is experienced in common. You can both create virtue and also non-virtue with body and speech in collectively with other beings. But mental karma is not something perceived in common. And the three types of mental karma are ill. If it's the negative ones, then it's ill will, covetousness. It's wanting what somebody else has. And wrong views. Those three types of karmic action are not shared in common between beings. So again, when you look at someone, you cannot see directly whether they have a right view or a wrong view. Through discussion, you can, and from what they say, then you can deduce whether the view is correct or incorrect. But when they're just sitting in a room somewhere or walking down the street and you look at them, you can't see directly whether they have a right view or wrong view. So it's always based on deduction. Your impression of whether their view is right or wrong will always be based on deduction, right? From various signs indicating it. Then the next thing is the transition at death, or to say it simply, death, is not experienced in common. So that means that even though you may be standing right next to someone who is dying, you do not experience that person's death. And that means only that person is the one dying. So only that person is experiencing the death itself. And you're watching the signs and concluding now the person is dying, right? But you're not experiencing death.
Also, if 10 people are, 20 people are in an aeroplane and they all experience things, something different.
They would be experiencing different things, yes. They would have different experiences of death. There are various processes one goes through when dying, right? And some of them are able to, some of it is very subtle, right? What happens, that three appearances called the white, the red, and the black appearance, which are experienced both when you fall asleep and also when you die. And if you're sufficiently trained, you can recognize all three. If you're not so sharp, you can maybe recognize two of them, or one. Or maybe you never even heard of that, right? And you never even thought of that, and you wouldn't even you wouldn't recognize it. So a person who was trained would have a completely different experience of death than with someone who was not, right? Because that trained person could would experience those white, red, and black appearances, whereas somebody else just dies, right? has mainly the suffering of dying, the suffering, the anxiety, the fear, and so on. So that's that one. Then the next one is birth. And now it's a little bit confusing because yesterday we said birth was experienced in common. It's exchanged in the translation. The order is turned around for the sake of the meter. Otherwise it didn't fit with the beats right in the line. But in the Tibetan, birth comes before captivity. And yesterday we said birth was experienced in common, so why do we now say today that it's not? Can't we make up our mind? Or is Maitreya confused? Or he was having a bad day? No, the fact is that the birth that's meant here is birth in the next life. So when someone is dying, then you don't know where that person is going to be reborn. So none of the family or anyone else will be able to perceive directly where that mind stream is going. It's only perceived by the person himself or herself. And even at the moment of death, they wouldn't be experiencing it either. It comes after death. So that's an extremely private experience, which happens in the bardo, right? And what one experiences in the bardo depends on the karmic impulses that have been collected during life. So the bardo is completely without any kind of free will. What you experience in the bardo is a program. It's the computer program that you punched in while you were living, right? And then during the bardo, you flip out in all of these programs that you punched in. But there's no... Unless there is, in fact, a chance to get a realization during the bardo, if you have proper instructions and training. But without those, then one just experiences whatever karma, whatever karmic actions one has committed earlier determine what you experience in the bardo. Also, rebirth. Which rebirth you take is determined already by your karmic actions from the life before. Then, captivity means the particular way that you are bound in samsara. And what that refers to specifically would be your particular set of nyumong and dugngal. Right? Nyumong, the afflicted states or disturbing emotions. And dugngal, the suffering. So that's what binds us in samsara, the afflicted states and the suffering. And that is completely private for each individual. And it's not experienced in common. That is to say, it's not something you can see directly on another person. Again, you can conclude it indirectly from signs, but you can't see it directly. And the same goes for liberation. Liberation, the particular way that a given being is liberated from a particular set of disturbing emotions and suffering. That's also a completely private experience. So all of these are not observed in common, and therefore they make up the ground which is not shared in common. So we could maybe read through what the commentary itself says. It's quite short. Since the ground, which is the all-inclusive base consciousness, the principles of awareness which make up the sevenfold collection, personal experience of happiness and suffering, mentally committed karmic action, transition at death, taking rebirth in a specific form of conditioned existence, the captivity or bondage experienced in the samsaric cycle, and liberation from that cycle are all phenomena of an individual mind stream which are not observed in common. And since these private experiences belonging uniquely to an individual mind stream cannot be rendered directly accessible to common experience on the part of other sentient beings, they make up what are called the ground which is not shared in common with others. So even if one wanted to, and even if one tried, one could not put others directly into contact with the way that you are experiencing these things. You know, even if it's your own happiness, you try to share that happiness with someone else. It's never 100%. There will always be, to a certain extent, it's your own experience, and the other one is having some other experience, even though both experiences may be positive. And they may be very similar. The closer you know someone, the closer the similarity will be. But it's always individual. So, yeah, that in fact concludes that.
But the case where we say that you mix your mind with the group mind, where does this, is it part of this circle?
Yeah, that's a little different area again. This is describing the process of consciousness as it usually happens,
yeah,
in an ordinary context.
So the other, that what I asked is not in that context.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very special context of the Vajrayana, where through skillful means, well, what it actually is skillful means for is realizing one's own Buddha nature. Because the sense in which the mind of the guru is the same as your own mind,
yeah,
is
exactly
that both have Buddha nature.
But I mean, when they say, well, if you can't realize it, because of it, this is a process that happens when you don't have the ability to realize it yourself. So it's not as if you have realized it and then it merges. It merges so you realize it.
Yeah, it's a skillful means to help you to realize the nature of your own mind.